Leviticus 25, verse number 10 says, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." This is Pastor Wynn Greer of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vivas, North Carolina, and I'd like to welcome you today to the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. The phrase Blessings of Liberty is from the preamble to the Constitution. And it says in part in the preamble to the Constitution, it says, "And secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity." And today we're going to be talking about the subject of our posterity. That posterity there, that means literally the definition, it means descendants, children, children's children, and etc. indefinitely. And it's interesting to me that that children, through that word posterity, are mentioned in the first paragraph of the Constitution of the United States of America. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. Before we get into that, we're going to say good morning to everyone. I want to say good morning to Noah, and I appreciate him and everything he does in the radio ministry that we have. Good morning, Noah. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to be here this morning. And we do want to say welcome to all our listeners, those who are listening in right here on AM 1450, located in Boone, North Carolina. Those who listen in on AM 690 out of Bristol, Virginia. And those who listen in out of Watertown, South Dakota, the station out there.
We do appreciate our listeners. And I want to say for our local listeners that I am the pastor of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. And we would like to take a moment to invite you, if you are in the area or visiting in the area, or you live here and you do not have a church home, we'd love for you to come and visit with us at the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. We're located 1 mile up Baird's Creek Road, just above the Willow Creek Golf Course. And we have Sunday morning services, Sunday school for all ages at 10, Sunday morning worship at 11. Every Wednesday night at 7, we have our midweek prayer and Bible study. And we're currently studying in the book of James, and I'm really enjoying that, and I'm getting a lot out of it. I hope everybody else is. And then on second and fourth Sunday nights at 6 p.m., we have our Sunday night service as well. So we'd love for you to come out and visit with us. Now, I've already mentioned a little bit about this, but the preamble to the Constitution, it says, "And secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity." That word posterity, if you read American history and the writings and speeches of our founding fathers, they use that phrase posterity a whole lot more than we do. We would just say our children, our grandchildren, the future generations, but they use that word posterity. And that's talking about their children, their children's children, just all throughout the future generations. And the reason I started with that today is because of what is going on in North Carolina right now concerning the North Carolina House is considering what they are calling the Family, Faith, and Freedom Protection Act of 2013. And that is a piece of legislation that has a great deal to do with abortion in the state of North Carolina, and also the implementation, I guess would be a good way to phrase it, of Sharia law into North Carolina family law. But what that piece of legislation would do would be to keep Sharia law from being used in our court system in North Carolina. So we're going to talk just a little bit about that today. And I will go ahead and let our listeners know that we might have a call from Raleigh. I was in contact with our state senator, Dan Suchek, and he is in Raleigh today. And if he gets the opportunity, he may call into the radio broadcast, and I don't know at what time that will be. So if he does call in, we'll just break into our comments, and we'll have him on the air. And we'll talk to him and see what's going on. But this is a huge piece of legislation. Now, the Constitution mentions our posterity, which means they were concerned not only about themselves, but their children and their children's children. Another source that is very, very important, much more important than the Constitution that talks about children, is the Bible. And one of my favorite books in the Bible, the book of Proverbs, has a great deal to say about children. Over and over again, you'll hear, or you'll read over there, "Hear, my children, the law of thy father, thy mother." And so the book of Proverbs is directed as well to children and about children. But I was reading a verse, and I've come across this in the past. I don't know if I've used it here on the radio broadcast. Maybe I've referred to it in times gone by. But there's a very interesting verse in the book of Proverbs, chapter 14, verse number 28. And it says over there, "In the multitude of people is the king's honor, but in the want of people is the destruction of the prince." Now that's talking about people in the nation. In the multitude of people is the king's honor. Now that word multitude, it's good to have a multitude. In fact, if you're going to have a nation and upkeep a nation and all the different aspects that need to be taken care of in a nation, we're talking about under the authority of a king here is what the context is. You think about, you've got to have an army, you've got to have food, you've got to have a government, you've got to have all kinds of things need to be taken care of in a nation in order for that nation to be prosperous, to grow, to take care of its citizens. So the Bible says, in the multitude of people is the king's honor. So a great many people, that's a blessing. That's a plus for a nation. But then it says, but in the want of people is the destruction of the prince. If you don't have enough people, it's a curse. It is a detriment to the nation if a nation does not have enough people. Now that's something that you don't hear very many people, you wouldn't hear that brought up. In fact, there's a great many out here that will say, "Oh, we have too many people. We can't function with this. We can't provide. There's not enough food." Well, that's not telling the truth about the place of people inside of a nation. For example, I recently heard a politician, I can't even remember who it was, but I was watching the news, and they were talking about this immigration bill that's come up, and they're trying to do something along the lines of immigration. And what he said during that interview, he was making the case for taking all these illegal immigrants that are in the nation and basically giving them amnesty. And what he was saying was, he said, "We need the workers. We need the workers here legally, so that they can pay into the system." He said, "As it is now, we do not have enough workers. We don't have enough people working in America, paying into the system, keeping Social Security, keeping Medicaid, all of these programs. We don't have enough workers to keep everything going that we need to have. And I come across something very interesting. It was a study. From the 2001 Social Security Trustees Report. And in that report, they put a graph in there of the workers in America in relation to each retiree in America. And in 1945, we had 41.9 average workers per retiree. Now, I could see where that many people paying Social Security, paying into the system, could sustain things. When somebody come to the time to retire, if there was 41, 42 people that were paying in for every retiree, well, that would be sustainable. We could see how that would work. Well, what's happened over the years, in 2000, for example, there was only 3.4 workers per retiree. That's a big difference, from 42 down to 3.4. And then it's projected that in 2020, there will only be 2.5 workers per retiree in the United States of America. And so these politicians, they're saying, we need these people. We need them in the country. We need them working. We need them paying into the system. We don't have enough workers in America paying into the system. That's what they're saying. Now, something that's interesting to me, nobody ever mentions the fact that since Roe versus Wade took effect in 1973, that there has been over 55 million abortions take place in America. That is more, that is way more than an entire workforce has been eliminated from our nation every year since 1973. That is 55 million people. That is an astonishing number. That is more than the population of several states put together. The population of North Carolina, South Carolina, West Virginia, Virginia, Kentucky. I figured that up one time. It's about 13, 14 different states it takes to make up the population of 55 million people. So the Bible says, in the multitude of people is the king's honor, but in the want of people, that word want there, that means lack, in the lack of people is the destruction of the prince. You have to have people in a country in order for the country to be able to be sustained. And when you don't have enough people in the country, it leads to the destruction of the prince. Now, several states have been in the news recently in regards to the subject of abortion. It's interesting to me, abortion is always in the news, sometimes more than others, but it just seems like lately there's been a lot about abortion in the news. And I believe as people become more and more informed about what is really going on in the abortion money racket industry, more and more people are coming to see that this is a problem in our nation, and more people are turning against abortion in the United States of America, which is a good thing. But several states have been in the news. In Wisconsin, for example, they've been talking about the governor signing in a controversial abortion law. And as far as I know, I believe he did do that. A lot of people are upset. It is more pro-life, which is a good thing. And so it's been in the news in Wisconsin. In Texas, Texas has been a lot in the news lately concerning the subject of abortion. And you might remember the woman out there that did the filibuster, and they tried to have a vote, the conservative members there, they tried to have a vote, and there was a lot of people in the chamber, and they made such a ruckus that they couldn't get the bill voted on and passed in time. So they were making a big deal about that just a couple of weeks ago. Then in the state of Pennsylvania recently, there was the Gosnell murder trial, and this abortion provider up there, this Mr. Gosnell, he had an abortion clinic. Two or three ladies had died there as a result of the poor procedures that they had gone through. There were reports of babies being born alive, and the doctor had just killed them, took a pair of scissors and cut their neck, their spinal cord, and just horrible, atrocious things going on. And the news media said very, very little about it until there was just such an outcry that they had to begin to cover this murder trial in the state of Pennsylvania. And then there's North Carolina. North Carolina is currently trying to pass the Family, Faith, and Freedom Protection Act. And I want to bring out some things about that and help inform you on some of the key points. This is something, if you are pro-life, you need to be much in prayer about. And I would encourage you to contact your representative of the House and the Senate here locally. It's Jonathan Jordan. He's the House Representative, and then our State Senator is Mr. Dan Suchak. So contact them, encourage them to vote for and pass this legislation if you are pro-life. Now, some of the good things about this bill, and it's only come up, it was last Tuesday that I first heard about it, in fact, so just about a week. And I actually heard about it on a liberal news program. And I was just listening, flipping through the channels there, and this very notorious liberal woman was all up in arms about North Carolina and the lawmakers down here. And boy, what a, and I mean, she, and I thought, boy, if she's mad about this, they must be doing something right. And so I got to looking into it, and sure enough, this family, or this Faith, Family, and Freedom Protection Act. But I'm going to give you about six things about this act that is very good. And so I'd like for you to pray about it and express your support to our representatives. Abortion, of course, is a very controversial subject. And people either come down on one side or the other. Not a lot of gray area in there. And so a few things, and I got this from the NorthCarolinaConservative.net website, and there's several resources that I looked at, but some of the things that this legislation would do, number one, it would prohibit sex selection abortions. Now, a sex selection abortion is an abortion that is performed strictly based on the parent or parents go in and say, I'm having a boy, I didn't want to have a boy, I want to have an abortion. Or I'm having a girl, we didn't want to have a girl, we want an abortion. It would prohibit sex selection abortions. Now, it absolutely astounds me that this pro-abortion side, especially the women, those who... I've seen signs, people carrying signs, my body, my choice. Well, what about the body you're carrying? Because make no mistake, there are two bodies. When there's a pregnancy, there are two bodies affected there. But they'll carry signs and wear shirts, my body, my choice, and they'll talk and about women's rights. And I've heard a lot of talk about this war on women. What could be a greater war on women than having an abortion strictly because you were having a baby girl or because you were having a baby boy? I don't believe that could be a greater war on anybody than just to dispense of somebody, to kill somebody because they are a male or a female. One article I read about this subject from the North Carolina Values Coalition said six separate studies in the past 4 years document the sad reality of baby girls being aborted in our country simply because they are girls. The greater majority of abortions are when people find out they're having a girl. For whatever reason that might be, that's a sad, it's all sad, but the greater majority are girls. And then it said, according to the UN, there are over 163 million girls missing around the world, largely because of gendercide. I never heard of that before. Gendercide, just based on somebody's gender, that they would have an abortion. So this bill would prohibit sex selection abortions. That's a good thing. Another thing it would do, it would make the state able to opt out of the federal exchange and the city and county health plans when it comes to abortion. And, you know, actually, there should be no public funding for abortion whatsoever. The government should not be funding this, using our tax dollars against the wishes of so many citizens. And so it would make the state able to opt out of that, and that would be a good thing. Number three, it would require the physician to be physically present to prevent something that is called webcam abortions. This is something I'd never heard of before, but is taking place. This is the new I guess, use of technology in the abortion industry, a abortion provider can just simply interview a girl by way of webcam on Skype or something like that, and interview them, diagnose them, prescribe abortion-inducing medicines. I don't think medicine is a good word for that, but it would prevent this misuse of abortion-inducing drugs. And recently in Charlotte, North Carolina, there was an abortion clinic down there that was closed down, temporarily had its license revoked, for one of the things was having abortions when the doctor was not present. Now, Mr. Dan Suchek has called in, so we're going to get him on the line, and I appreciate him calling in, and go ahead and put him on there, Noah. Hello, how are you?
Hi, this is Dan Suchek.
Hey, I appreciate you calling in. We've been awaiting your call today. I really appreciate you calling.
I appreciate you giving me the opportunity.
Yes, sir. How is things in Raleigh today?
They are, well, they're pretty intense. We have a lot of discussions going on right now about pro-life legislation that's moving through the House and Senate.
Okay. So there's a lot of people.
Yeah, we've had different groups from both sides that are around the Capitol, and we had, I just spent the last 2 hours at a committee meeting in the House where they were discussing this, everything from the director of the Department of Health and Human Services to different groups for and against abortion, pro-life, talking about this bill, different issues of this bill, and a wide variety of things, but it's definitely a pro-life, pro-abortion day here.
Okay. Is one pretty well evenly represented, or?
It was. I think that's one of the things that plays to one of the great concerns has been about this issue and the speed in which it moves. And this is not an issue that citizens are unfamiliar with. At a moment's notice, the gallery is filled with people for and against this bill. These issues have been discussed for decades, and people know where they stand and are quite informed on them. And it doesn't take very long to get people together to speak their opinion. It's not something that people need to be educated on.
Right. Well, that's what we were trying to do here today. I was just going over some of the points of the bill, how it would prohibit sex selection abortions.
Correct.
And that the state would be able to opt out of the federal exchange.
Right.
Part of it. And that it would require the physician to be present if an abortion is performed.
Right, and that really goes to something that was really clear in a lot of different ways, was how important the safety in these clinics is. We just had another clinic shut down in Durham, and what's going on in Charlotte and Durham with these clinics are shut down is the type of care that any procedure of this magnitude for any part of your body, you wouldn't accept these types of conditions, and that more standards need to be put in place and more close scrutiny to make sure these clinics are safe was really evident through the testimony today, and that was part of what you're just talking about.
Right, and I had just mentioned the clinic in Charlotte that was temporarily closed down, and that's something that I can't see people being against. I mean, even those that are for people having abortions, why wouldn't they want, you know, they hold up coat hangers and say we're going to be back in dark alleys, and from some of the things I've read, they're not far from that the way it is now.
Well, and that was one of the... It's a really divided group here in that even though these are very common sense issues, you shouldn't abort a baby just because it's a female and you wanted a boy, or it also talks about taxpayer funding of abortions. We don't think we should force another taxpayer to pay for something they find morally objectionable.
Right.
And these aren't... This really isn't that sweeping of change. These are some small changes, some clarifications, some, I think, very good improvements in the industry, and that people would ignore these common sense decisions because they're so vehemently pro-abortion that they won't talk about any issue that could possibly change that role.
Right. That's what I've noticed, that those that are pro, they won't give on anything, even a good thing. So
they're resistant, and the arguments become very exaggerated towards what this bill actually does. and their fear towards any chink in the armor of their industry is really quite surprising.
Right. Could you give us just a quick rundown from your perspective of some of the highlights? I know I mentioned a few, but there might be something you're working on or concerned about that maybe we could at least help pray about or know about.
Well, where the process, it's a long process. This has been going on for months and months, and it still has quite a ways to go. My thoughts and prayers are is that we will have an opportunity to vote on this, and that it won't be shoved off, and that the governor will allow this to become law, because I really feel that it's important legislation. I think we have the vast majority of the House and the Senate behind this, and that it will go to the governor, and that he will not resist this, because this is quite common sense things that I believe are in the interest of the health and welfare of the citizens of North Carolina.
Right. Now, most people don't recognize the process that you have to go through. What time frame are you looking at? Is this something that could happen in a month or a year? You know, what?
No, well, I expect it's at the end of the process. It could be voted on today and sent to the governor. I don't expect it to be happen that way, because there's a couple more administrative hurdles that will probably go over. But I expect in the next 24 to 48 hours us to have a very good idea on where this bill is going. And I expect that this bill or something very, very close to this bill will be on its way to the governor's desk within a week.
Right. Well, good. Now, something I had started to mention, there's a part about Sharia law.
Sure. And what that really was is addressing in family court cases that the laws of the United States need to be upheld when looking at divorces, custody hearings. There have been some instances in courts where a judgment from a foreign country has been levied, which didn't fit with our laws. And we're just saying that when that court is heard, when that case is heard in the United States, we need to be using U.S. laws and U.S. Constitution to decide these things, and that foreign laws, and it's really a very specific area of family court, that those things can be overridden if the court system doesn't think that it complies. Those different mandates from a foreign court can be overridden if our court doesn't think that that complies with U.S. law.
Right.
It's not that big of a legislation, but it's an important principle that we're United States citizens, North Carolina citizens, and our laws and our Constitution is what we should live under. And I think that's an important concept.
Yes, I do too. I know other states have had more problems with this. Is this something that has come up in North Carolina, or is this just sort of preemptive?
It's more preemptive, and it really isn't stating anything that shouldn't occur anyway, because that's pretty common sense that our courts should decide things according to our Constitution and our laws. It's just sometimes the legislature will remind the courts through legislation that, remember, in these cases, this is how you need to act, and that's what this really does. It doesn't really tell them to do anything they shouldn't be doing anyway. It's just a good, healthy reminder.
Right. Okay. Well, we've got about 30 seconds left. Is there anything you'd like? What can we do?
I think that if you have a legislature that supports your viewpoint, give them a call or an email and encourage them in that. I think that make sure that you're informed about the details. There's so many of the things going on, especially in this bill and many bills. What is spread around isn't accurate. Spend a little time to research and find out what the truth is. And in the end, this is a common sense bill that really protects the welfare of citizens in North Carolina. And I'm happy to support it, and I will do everything I can to move this towards and pass the governor's desk.
All right. I thank you so much for calling in, and we are praying for you, and I just really appreciate you calling today.
All right. Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Okay. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Noah's going to come give the contact information. We appreciate you listening in today.
If you'd like to contact us, our church phone number is 828-963-4596 or through our church website at mountlebanonbc.org.